Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 22 of the Hockey Strength Podcast, the official podcast of HockeyStrengthAndConditioning.com. I'm your host, Brian Sippets. You can reach me at HockeyStrengthPodcast@gmail.com. Please feel free to reach out if you have any questions about today's show or if there's certain things you'd like to hear about in the future. We're always looking for great content or great ideas for the podcast, so if you have something, please feel free to throw it our way, and we'd love to hear from you. On today's episode, we're going to be talking to Devin McConnell, the Director of Sports Performance at UMass Lowell. He's done some phenomenal work with the hockey team there and has really contributed some great articles to our site, so we're excited to have him. And finally, surprisingly, this is the first time he's been on the podcast, so looking forward to finally talking to him and hearing a little bit about his most recent article, Aerobic Training for a Collegiate Team. So we're going to be talking a little bit about that. Devin is also speaking at the upcoming NSCA Training for Hockey Clinic out in Colorado Springs the weekend of June 13th. So that's coming up pretty quick here. There's a really phenomenal lineup that the NSCA has put together there, including Jim Schneider from Wisconsin, Joe Marr from University of Michigan, and Mike Potenza from the San Jose Sharks, among other great, great speakers. I'm also getting the opportunity to speak out at the clinic this year, so I'm going to be doing a great amount of listening out there and a little less talking, being around such a great group of coaches. So I'm looking forward to that experience, and I know Devin is going to do a great job out there as well. So before we get on the phone with Devin McConnell, I'd like to talk a little bit about HockeyStrengthAndConditioning.com. It's the web's greatest collection of hockey strength and conditioning information, complete with material from the top NHL, collegiate, and private strength coaches. At HockeyStrengthAndConditioning.com, you'll find hundreds of articles, videos, programs, and webinars, all geared towards improving the performance of hockey players. So whether you're a strength and conditioning professional, a motivated player, a youth coach, or a hockey parent, HockeyStrengthAndConditioning.com is the only training resource you'll ever need to produce healthier, stronger, more effective players at any level. New articles, videos, and programs are posted weekly, along with periodic podcasts and webinars, and all of our coaches weigh in on the ongoing forum discussions. If you're new to HockeyStrengthAndConditioning.com, you can gain instant access to our members-only content for just $1 for the first 7 days. You'll be able to check out training videos, current programs, and articles from some of the best strength coaches in hockey, or they can answer your questions directly in the forum. We know you're going to love the content, but if you're not completely happy with it, simply cancel your trial membership and you'll be out just a buck. After the 7-day trial period, you can continue to be a member for just $14.95 a month, or you can sign up for the whole year for just $149. It's basically receiving 2 months free. Either option's a great bargain for so much material from the nation's top coaches, so don't miss your chance to be a part of the community. All right, looks like we're ready to go with Director of Sports Performance at UMass Lowell, Coach Devin McConnell. All right, we're on the phone with the strength coach at University of Massachusetts in Lowell, Devin McConnell. Devin, how are you doing today?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing well. So you're the Director of Performance there at UMass Lowell, and you've just done phenomenal things with the hockey program. So we're excited to talk to you, and also you contribute quite a bit to the site. So, we were actually excited to talk about a new article that you have up about the energy system development of your team. So first of all, I guess just to kind of review and to sort of lay down a good base, could you talk a little bit about the different systems that you're looking to develop at certain times of the year?
Yeah. So in general terms, there's three different energy systems that the human body runs off of. There's the alactic system, which basically provides power to the system for the first 5 to 10 seconds of explosive work. Then there's the lactic system, which sort of more or less takes over from that point up until about a minute or so worth of duration, and then anything sort of beyond that, sort of 1 minute, 1 minute 30, somewhere in there, becomes a little bit more aerobic. So we're talking about the alactic, the lactic, and the aerobic system in general. And we try to think about here at UMass Lowell breaking up our entire year, our 52-week calendar, into sort of subsections where we're more focused on one of those energy systems more than the other, to hopefully develop the best sort of well-conditioned hockey player possible.
Good, that makes sense. Yeah, I think really importantly, one of the most recent articles that come out, or studies, I guess, was done directly on hockey players. It's kind of co-authored by Cal Dietz up in Minnesota, talking about the contribution of the aerobic system. So what we would think of as the long distance, sort of what keeps you going low and slow, the contribution of the aerobic system to repeat sprint performance. And that's a study that came out about a month or two ago. So that's something that's sort of swung back and forth. Talk a little bit about how you guys use, are you training the aerobic system? Like what's your approach there?
Yeah, so I think the whole energy system thing, you're right, the pendulum has kind of swung back and forth. It used to be, we used to train hockey players, you know, VO2 max was a big sort of metric for hockey players. So we really tried to develop the aerobic system via, you know, long runs, long bike rides, that type of idea. And it sort of swung back the other way where we said, well, you know, the sport is actually more interval based. It's more lactic or anaerobic, where it's, you know, shifts or 45 seconds to a minute, with rest. So we need to train sort of all that and just have high intensity interval training. And it's kind of swinging back the other direction where we're better understanding that, while the sport itself on the ice, the duration is of a shift is obviously 45 seconds or so, the aerobic system is actually incredibly important, not so much to provide the energy necessary to perform during each shift, but to allow the body to recover from the work done each shift. If an athlete doesn't have a good aerobic system, the high intensity work they do during every shift will basically accumulate a lot of sort of lactic acid, for lack of a better term, and the athlete will fatigue really quickly. So you need a strong aerobic system so that you can have these higher intensity outbursts, but be able to recover from them and have that, what we call repeat sprint ability, that ability to go over and over and over really fast. So we do focus a lot on developing the aerobic system, but not in sort of the traditional, you know, long runs or 45-minute bike ride type of idea. We kind of attack it in a different way. And we also really attack the alactic system. So what we really want to try to develop is an athlete who spends a lot of time utilizing their aerobic system and being able to recover and sort of be low, but then also have a really well-developed alactic system where they're very explosive and they can have repeated bouts of explosive effort over and over and over. We actually want to spend very little time in that middle area, that lactic area, where we're repeatedly doing a lot of work that lasts 45 seconds to a minute of high-intensity work. Because what we found using different technologies, heart rate technology and GPS technology, is that even though a shift might be 45 seconds to a minute, the athlete is actually doing multiple 5 to 10 second bouts of work with recovery. So we try to develop the aerobic system, we try to develop the alactic system, and we kind of try to avoid, except for a very small window of time, maybe in the preseason, the lactic system. So that's sort of, in a general sense, how we think about physical development from the energy systems with our guys.
That's interesting. It's almost a little bit counterintuitive. Like you said, you look at the time of a shift, and when you talk about you know, this general idea of training specificity, you're looking to train for the sport that you're playing, and so the assumption would be that you could look at a shift time and say, we go for 45 seconds, maybe on the long end. We should probably be prepared for that. So we should be, you know, training 45 second intervals, but you guys are sort of shying away from that, and going more for shorter sprint, type workouts.
Yeah. So it's multifaceted. We do spend some time, a short period of time in our late off season, really focusing on that, you know, 30 seconds to a minute, very lactic, very anaerobic work. It's extremely fatiguing, But the reality is what we've learned is it only takes a couple of weeks of really focused work at that to sort of peak that ability. And any time spent after that really focusing on that quality, it doesn't improve anything. It just becomes extremely fatiguing. So we spent 3 to 4 weeks sort of as we transition end of the off season, start of the preseason, where we do focus on that traditional longer interval based work. But once we've gotten good at that ability, we only have to touch on that every once in a while. And the reality is in season, we'll touch on that in practice, you know, relatively consistently just from doing normal practice work. So we don't have to worry about that. What we want to try to develop more in the weight room and in the conditioning work is we want to be faster. We want to be more explosive. And then we want to be able to recover from that so we can do that more and more often. When you look at the game and you look at things like GPS data, you know, the game is really won and lost over 3 or 4 strides. If two guys are racing for a puck, the guy who's out in front after 2 or 3 or 4 steps, he's going to win the race. So we want our guys to get better at those first 3 or 4 strides. And to train that, you have to be well rested every time you perform a bout of work. So to actually get faster, you need to go at top speed, but you need to recover as long as necessary to be able to continue to go at top speed. We don't want that to become really fatiguing. So we'll spend most of our off season working just on sort of the low end aerobic ability. So we're getting better recovering from those bouts of speed work, really focusing on acceleration work and work over 5 or 10 seconds, but allowing a lot of recovery so we can continue to get faster.
Gotcha. So kind of going back to the aerobic end of things. So I think the reason that the pendulum swings went so far to the anaerobic side, to the sprint interval training side of things, is because studies were showing that, you know, repeated sprints actually increase VO2 and increase your aerobic capacity. So people were saying, well, if we can get this short, intense interval work done, we're also going to be training the aerobic system. And there you're kind of killing two birds with one stone. Is that still seen to be true? I mean, or you know, with things
it's,
going...
It's,
go ahead.
Yeah, it's true. But what was missed in that whole discussion, and I missed it as well, is that increase in aerobic capacity via anaerobic work only goes to a certain point and only lasts for so long. So if you only have 6 weeks or 4 weeks to train, then 100% you should be doing high intensity interval training, because it's gonna get you, you're gonna kill two birds with one stone much quicker. But we're looking at it as far as really a 52-week calendar, not a 6-week calendar. So we have the luxury of spacing things out. If you only have a short period of time, I would absolutely focus on that high intensity interval work. And again, we're still gonna do that, but we're only gonna do that for about 4 weeks. Where we're really going to hit it hard. We're going to touch on it the rest of the year, but we're really going to hit it hard for 4 or 6 weeks. The other parts of the year, we're going to spend trying to further develop the other qualities. I think that was what was sort of missing in that whole idea of, well, all you need to do is interval work, is the context of that's all you need to do if you only have a short period of time. Because once you've attained those increases in VO2 max, to a certain degree, doing interval work, you don't continue to sort of forever increase VO2 max. If you wanted to, if that were the goal, at that point, you would have to do some more traditional aerobic type work. So that, I think, is part of what was missed in that whole conversation, probably 5 to 10 years ago, now at this point, of swinging the pendulum all the way back to just doing anaerobic or lactic work.
Right. Okay. Great scoop there. I guess I missed that as well. I mean, that seems to come up all the time, is with these research articles or research materials, that something was missed. There's always something that falls through the cracks there. But yeah, that's good scoop. So what kind of stuff are you guys doing to develop that aerobic? You said you're not doing
slow, steady state runs or bikes. I know a lot of countries are still doing that based on what Daryl said about, you know, Finnish teams and Swedish teams. There's still a lot of teams that after practice, they're spending 45 minutes on a bike doing steady state stuff. And from your article, you mentioned that you're not doing a lot of steady state.
No, we really don't. We don't do any steady state more than maybe at the very beginning of our off season. We will walk the stairs in our arena for maybe 20 minutes, and that's about as steady state as it gets. So the way we try to develop the, what I really call the alactic aerobic system, because you can develop that alactic explosive outburst and the underlying aerobic system sort of at the same time. We do that in a couple of ways. So, and this is what I touch on in the article. The way I structure my training sessions every day, we'll go through about a 30 to 40 minute warm-up / movement skills / plyometrics program. Then we'll lift. We'll go into our traditional lift for another 45 minutes, and then we'll spend the last 15 to 20 minutes at the end specifically doing conditioning work. And the way we structure our what we call our pre-lift, so our movement, our plyometric work, is basically in a fashion that all of the exercises we're going to do, so we're going to do box jumps, we're going to do medicine ball throws, we're going to do sprints, we're going to do sled work, we're going to do those in sort of a circuit format where each individual exercise lasts no more than 5 seconds. The athlete is going to do that exercise at maximal intensity. So if we're going to do sprint work, we're going to do 10, you know, maybe 10-yard sprints. Each rep is going to be as absolutely hard, as absolutely fast as they can go. They can't go to the next exercise until their heart rate has recovered down into the, you know, so-called aerobic zone, down around 60% of max heart rate. And the way we do that logistically is we have a heart rate system that we can put up on the TV screen in the weight room. So guys see when our heart rate recovers down to a certain level. So they have to wait in between each exercise. So a player might do 5 box jumps and then have to look at the TV and wait for his heart rate to come down. And then he'll do 5 medicine ball chest passes and then wait for his heart rate to come down. Then he'll move on to the sled and do a sled sprint. And we'll go through a circuit like that. And it'll last about 20 minutes. So during that initial 20 minutes of work, we're developing the alactic system by being explosive in each exercise. And we're also developing the aerobic system by making sure that we recover long enough so that our heart rate comes down. So the entire block of time, we're sort of living in the aerobic area. After that pre-lift work, where we're doing our movement and our power work, we'll go into our actual lift. And this wasn't necessarily by design, but what we've found looking at our data afterwards is that 45 minutes of training, of lifting, the way we structure that is everything is what we call a tri-set or a quad set. So it'll be a main exercise like a hang clean, and then it'll be one or two other exercises like a core exercise and a stretch that allow us to get a lot of things done in a short period of time. What happens is over that next 45 minutes of training, where you have a hard exercise and then two easy ones, is our heart rates stay for 45 minutes in, relatively speaking, the aerobic zone. So we'll do our pre-lift work where we're alactic aerobic. We'll do our lifting work where we end up being very alactic aerobic. And then at the end, we'll do our conditioning work. And depending on what time of the year it is, if we're trying to develop aerobic power or lactic capacity or any of the categories we think about, we simply do our shuttle runs or our slide board or our bike sprints in this idea of training the right duration and then recovering to a heart rate that allows us to continue to develop that aerobic system. And what you see is over the course of an hour and a half session, the entire time we've spent a tremendous amount of time in the sort of aerobic zone. We're actually developing the aerobic system while we're doing lifting work, while we're doing sprint work, without ever having done a 45-minute jog or a 45-minute bike ride at a moderate pace. We're developing that sort of moderate pace just by going from exercise to exercise and making sure we're aware of what our heart rate is doing.
I'm sure the players appreciate not having to sit on a bike or run for distance. I mean, notoriously bad runners, hockey players, but
no question.
So that's great. I mean, just through smart program design, you're getting the desired goals.
Yeah, exactly. And I always tell people that, you know, say, well, you know, you're not going to get the VO2 max that you would if you just focused on, you know, 6 weeks of endurance work. And absolutely true. But we don't need the VO2 max of an elite cyclist. You know what I mean? That's not what hockey players, we're looking for a more well-rounded approach. And what we have found is, you know, one of the indicators of a well-developed aerobic system is a resting heart rate under 60. And very consistently, our guys throughout, you know, really the course of the season, we monitor this all the time, but most of our guys have a resting heart rate between 40 and 60. So we don't do any traditional steady state work, and we still have a very well-developed aerobic system. And it's just by, like you said, smart program design and understanding that we're not always trying to, you know, quote unquote, bag the players. That's not always the best option. We want more explosive hard work and then recovery work so that every time our explosive work is done, it's really fast and really explosive. We never want our training, whether it's our sprinting, whether it's our lifting, we never want any of that to be a slog. It should never be a grind. We always want really high quality, really explosive, fast, powerful work.
And that's a great argument too. I mean, that's a great point and a great illustration of why, you know, something that we talk about on the site quite a bit is that we don't want our athletes training to exhaustion all the time. We don't want those long, slow sets where you've got high reps and that kind of stuff. Number one, it's not strength training. If you're strength training, and number two, it's just not all that beneficial for hockey. So that's a great illustration and goes right along with what we've been talking about on the site as well.
Yeah. And I mean, if you know, you want to take it to the sports specificity side of it, you get good at what you train, right? So if all you do is train like just really fatiguing, slow, grinding work, you're going to get good at that. But that's not what necessarily you want to see on the ice. We always want our players, you always want fast players, you always want explosive players on the ice. But then I see a lot of times coaches then say in practice, well, I'm just going to grind you into the ground and expect you to become faster, but that's not really what happens. You have to train fast to be fast.
Right. So how often are you spending in this zone where your focus is getting your aerobic training through the alactic system? How long are you spending in that, and then when do you focus more on the alactic system?
We're sort of always focused on the alactic system. I mean, that's what Olympic lifts are. That's what, you know, low rep strength work basically is. Anything that we're doing at close to maximal intensity for less than 10 seconds, as long as we're allowing recovery, is going to be developing that alactic system. The aerobic system, you know, when we're in season, the truth be told, I'm not spending a lot of time specifically developing or focused on developing energy systems, but I am looking at what we do in practice and then supplementing it if need be. So as long as we're doing a lot of sprint or high intensity short work with recovery in practice, then I'm not worried about adding extra, say, sled sprints, because I know we're developing that. But if we're spending a lot of time at practice where the players are doing more lactic work, more traditional 45 seconds of work and you know, 30 or 45 seconds of rest, then I might supplement with some more general low-intensity aerobic work just to offset a little bit of that. So it kind of depends on what we're doing on the ice. In season, I'm really more going to focus on just the basics of getting strong and powerful and staying strong and powerful. It's the off-season where I'm really going to focus more on the development of the energy systems.
Right. All right. Well, I think, I mean, that's definitely a great blueprint and a great way to approach the training season. You know, it's like we said, the pendulum is swinging back. So this is relatively new, this kind of focus. And there's a lot of new information coming out that's sort of pushing that along. So we really appreciate you writing the article. And as always, you've got some great information to share. And you know, I hope you continue doing all those great things there at UMass Lowell. And we're happy to have you a part of the site and being a good friend to the site. And you're definitely helping a lot of other strength and conditioning coaches out there.
Well, I appreciate the kind words. It's my pleasure to be on, and the article hopefully sheds some light on what we do, and I appreciate everything you guys do with the site. It's been a great resource.
All right, well, thanks again, Devin, and have a great rest of your day, and enjoy training those guys later this afternoon.
All right, thanks, Brian.
All right, that's going to wrap up episode 22 of the Hockey Strength Podcast. Thanks so much to Coach Devin McConnell from UMass Lowell for joining us. I think he did a great job illustrating why intelligent training is such a key part of any collegiate ice hockey program, or any program for that matter. But just through intelligent program design, they're getting a lot done, especially with the limitations, the time limitations that they have there. So he's doing a phenomenal job there, like I said, and I hope he continues with the great work there. If you've got some extra frequent flyer miles to use up, you can join us on June 12th out at the NSCA's Training for Ice Hockey Clinic. I'll be speaking out there along with Coach McConnell and also Mike Potenza from the San Jose Sharks, Jim Snyder from Wisconsin, Joe Marr from University of Michigan, and a handful of other great speakers out there. We're looking forward to tons of great information there and most likely some additional podcast guests out of that. So until next time, guys, be sure to train smart and check out hockeystrengthandconditioning.com for the web's greatest articles, videos, and programs for training hockey players. Thanks for listening, everybody.